if you want to make a living with as an artist, you have to have a passion for the craft, because it's not easy. And your passion will carry you through the darker times, the harder times.
Unconventional Life, the show where I interview successful entrepreneurs, artists, creatives, and thought leaders on how they earn their living in non-traditional ways. We will explore how they took the path less traveled, what their revenue model looks like, and why they are prioritizing their passion over their paycheck. I'm your host, Joel Schroeder. Unconventional Life, welcome. This is your host, Joel Schroeder, tuning in today from Boulder, Colorado. Today's guest is joining us from New York City. We've got Nick Onken in the house. Nick, are you ready to take us down the path less traveled?
Let's go.
Amazing. So Nick and I just got the pleasure of meeting in Madagascar for Unconventional Life on our like glorious private island that we had with all the beautiful people. And we're both like back in our cold places. Like, what are we doing with our life? But I had such a pleasure of getting to know Nick. And for those of you that don't know Nick, he's just like super boss photographer, hat maker, life extraordinaire. He's also the podcast host of Nyon Radio and really this creative entrepreneur devoted to inspiring the world to create their moments and really create their life. And I know you've photographed a lot of personalities such as Justin Bieber, Usher, Orlando Bloom, Jessica Alba, of course, Jules Schroeder now. We did a great shoot as well, but just a lot of really incredible people. And then you've also done a lot of amazing campaigns for a lot of international brands like Nike, Coca-Cola, Adidas. You've had your work published in Cosmopolitan, Marie Claire, Condé Nast Traveler. And on your podcast, you've also had some really great guests like Donna Karan, Usher, Scooter Braun, and several others. And I think beyond the repertoire of the work that you do, you just also have a really big focus on impact as well. And I know you've worked with Pencils of Promise, and really there's this heart of education being the root of how to solve the world's problems. So I love all of that. I've loved a lot of the conversations we've had so far, and excited to have, you know, this conversation on air. So welcome to the show, and fill in any gaps that I might have left out, and give us a glimpse into your personal life.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. And I think that covers quite a bit of the range of my my life and career. And I think there's always been a journey within that, and from like going from the top to business declining and having to reshift things and evolve things, and that transcends into like the personal world and personal development, which has been a huge aspect of my last few years of my life. I truly think that becoming a better human makes the world a better place, and I think we all have to do our parts with that. We're the only ones that can choose to make our own lives better and become a better version of ourselves. So that's been my philosophy thus far, and I think always being in a state of creation, right? Like creation is putting intention into the way that you live.
Yeah, absolutely. And, I like what you touched on a little bit about, you know, kind of, it's like, you've been at the top, you've been at the bottom. Like I know for myself, it's like, I've made a shit ton of money. I've lost a shit ton of money. I've had success. I've, you know, not had success. And I think for a lot of our listeners, that's been true as well. And, you know, I think where you are now, I know you're also in a bit of transition, we've talked about, and, you know, have definitely had a really impressive career and have done a lot of really great things. And how do you reconcile that in yourself? You know, and I think this is true for a lot of our listeners, where you've come from this world where on the outside, you know, people look at you or they listen to this bio and they're like, whoa, that's like really impressive. And you've done a lot of different things, to this internal knowing that things are shifting. And, you know, even though you've been somewhere, that's not necessarily where you're going. And so, yeah, if you can, you know, just give us a glimpse of how that's true in your own life right now and how you relate to that.
Yeah. I mean, I think the biggest thing is, you know, doing emotional intelligence work and deeper spiritual work and learning how to detach from the ego and all the things that the ego needs to be fed. I mean, there's so much constant external validation, and especially in the career and the life that I've had, in, you know, there's a lot of accolades. There's a lot of, I've shot a lot of big names. I've worked with a lot of big brands, and there's like, you know, the ego loves to be attached to that. And I think for me, when things started to slow down, a lot of industry shifts, a lot of different things, saturation in the market, my own energy shifts. Now that I look back on things, I can see that, you know, there was a bit of burnout, my energy shift, things shifted as well. And then, you know, that sent me into like a deeper downward mental spiral. And I didn't even know what to do with it. I didn't even know what emotional intelligence was. I didn't even know what awareness was. And I think the biggest thing I learned through that was how much I was finding validation in who and what I was shooting. Because that's what made me feel good about myself. That's where I got my self-worth. That was like a huge thing. And from a lot of the work that I've done, it's been learning how to detach from that and find fulfillment from an introspective space. And it got deeper and deeper and deeper into like a spiritual world. I went through a spiritual, like existential dark night of the soul about a year and a half ago, and just questioned the existence of everything, because like everything is really just, we made it all up.
Yeah.
and you know, but we are here, we are having this human experience. And I think there's this kind of balance between creating meaning, you know, we are meaning making machines, and that's the only way we have to find our own meaning. You know, have you ever read the book Man's Search for Meaning?
Yeah,
it's such a great book in terms of creating that meaning in dire circumstances. We can't choose our circumstances, but we can choose the meaning that we derive from that, the perspective that we see those from. And I think choosing to create that for yourself is such a big space. And for me, I've had to choose to create a new pivot, a new resolve, and really like get to the heart of what matters, right? Like I love photography. I love creating things. I make hats, I make podcasts, I make art, I make photographs, and getting back to the actual passion of that creation versus the validation of putting it on Instagram and getting likes and whatever that looks like. I think being able to separate, being able to separate from the ego and what the ego needs to be fed. I don't know if you read the Eckhart Tolle's A New Earth book, but he talks a lot about, such a great book, much better than The Power of Now, in my opinion. But The Power of Now is so basic. But like, A New Earth was an amazing shapeshifter for me through my own like awakening or whatever you want to call it, and just learning and understanding what kinds of things that the ego needs to be fed and how the ego works and how it just like, you know, you look at, say, somebody like our president, who his ego is so big and so fragile that he just needs so much external validation to even feel good about himself. Such a huge piece of awareness to come to is that that's actually happening. So yeah, I think creating that distinction and that awareness has been a huge key for me.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, just to give a little bit of context, you know, I know you mentioned about a year and a half ago is kind of when this unraveling started. Like if we were a fly on the wall, like what would we have seen like in the day to day of like Nick's life? Like what would it have looked like?
Like hibernating and not wanting to talk to anyone.
Yeah.
Not feeling social, just feeling very apathetic. And it was interesting because I went through a big breakup with my ex, and you know, it was more my choice than anything, and it just wasn't working. And that breakup kind of sent me into this darker contemplative state, and I was questioning everything. I was reading all these books, I was questioning a lot of things, and I just didn't like, I didn't want to be social, I didn't want to talk to you, I didn't really want to like be out. You know, there was points where I still like kind of forced myself to keep moving and things like that, but I think there was so much of this, like, I just got to keep putting one step in front of the other and moving forward. And then I did DMT, 5-MeO DMT, and blasted out of this this human experience into like the outer reaches of the conscious universe or whatever you want to call it, and came back. And that was like, that really actually put like it created a bigger contrast for me. So I was even in a darker, deeper state. Was really just depressed. I don't think it was a depression in the state of like, I'm like, I want to kill myself kind of thing, but it was more like, God, well, like, what are we doing here? Like, what's the meaning of anything? Like, all this is just completely made up and we're just existing and kind of, you know, but it's not who we are. And like, there's a lot of these questions. It was a very contemplative time. I didn't even know what a dark night of the soul was. until like another couple, a month or two later, I actually was, somebody led a breathwork session at this event that I was at. And it really like was, it felt very transformative to me. And then I started doing it like every day, because that was the one thing that took me out of the default mode network in my brain. It got me out, it transitioned me, and it helped me to integrate, because you hit certain, there's certain spaces that you can hit in breathwork that's very similar to DMT. And that was kind of the start of climbing out of it, but it was very slow. And it was very just like, you know, I didn't want to do anything. I was just, I didn't want to like create. I was like uninspired. I was apathetic. And I was, so I started looking at breathwork, found like a friend of mine who I had just recently met was into breathwork, and got to talking to him. And he's like, yeah, through a dark night of the soul. I was like, what is that? I didn't even know what it was. I didn't know what it was. So it was
experience.
Yeah. So I look it up online. I Googled it and found some stuff, and I was like, oh, I'm feeling exactly that right now. So I was able to put a label on it and kind of understand it a little bit more, and then just slowly keep doing, you know, I think I really pivoted into taking care of myself and creating as many practices and energetic healings and as much as I could do to like move through it. And it took a good year and a half, and I feel like I'm just now starting to like really get back to the top again, or get out of it.
Absolutely. Yeah, I appreciate you sharing all that. And I think, you know, for myself, it's definitely been true. And I think for many of us, like, we go through these experiences, whether it's like a breakup is the catalyst, or, you know, for me, when I had this like near death experience, in a lot of ways, like, talk about, like, you know, I came back from that. And I was like, what is the point of all of all of this thing that we do called
yeah,
life, right? Like, what is the point of all this? Or whether it's, you know, it's your job, you lose your job or something like that happens, or, you know, some contract fails and the business that you run, like, there's all these moments, these wake up moments, or these like inciting incidences that I think are really in a lot of ways propelling us into greater alignment and propelling us into, you know, what's true now versus what was true in the person we were when that was created, or what was true at that point. And so, definitely like a really relevant experience. And breathwork, just to give a little bit of context for that, for those of you that haven't, you know, worked with breathwork, it's become one of my favorite practices. I love that you cited as well. But for those that aren't familiar with breathwork, like, can you just share a little bit about what it is, what particularly the style it is that you liked, and for those that might want to try to engage with it, like, any resources you might be able to recommend?
Yeah, I didn't realize like how extensive the world of breath work is. And like, there's some GOG gangster like like instructors out there. But for me, like, I kind of got inducted into the Wim Hof method, which I don't necessarily, I found it in a different context. And, you know, he does it like sitting up, you look at a stopwatch, you do a certain amount of breaths and all this stuff. And then this guy that taught us, basically had us, he turned down the lights, we laid down and had blankets and like an eye mask, and he turned on a soundtrack, and you basically kind of go, it's about 2.5 minutes of kind of circular like breaths like that, and you exhale and you hold your breath for as long as you can. You'd be surprised, you can hold your breath for 2 to 3 minutes, because your body is so pumped with oxygen. And then you, after that, you hold it until you can't hold it anymore. And then you take a breath in, and then you kind of breathe normally after that. So that's like one round. And then you do 6 rounds of that. You can do as many, up to 6 typically in one sitting. And for me, I was doing that. I kind of took that. I was doing it. I was like looking at the stopwatch. He's got an app and everything for it. And then I was like, it's taking me out of the experience to look at the app. So I created my own music soundtrack and guiding soundtrack, which you can, I have it available on, I did a podcast on it recently.
Yeah, we can include a link in the show notes if anyone wants to take a listen to that.
Yeah, and so I kind of, there's like a little instruction video, and obviously like take this, you know, with caution, and there's a lot of things, you know, people release a lot of emotion through breath work and stuff like that. So but for me, like, I was doing that. I created the soundtrack with my own guiding vocals at the timestamps, and it like allows me to drop into a deeper meditative state without, when you don't have to pay attention to the stopwatch. And so I just, I did that. I've been doing that, or I was doing it like every day for like a few months just to get me out of this space. Because what breathwork is doing is it's same thing as psychedelics. A lot of psychedelics do is it pulls you out of your default mode network, and your default mode network in your brain is the neural nets that is that story, the story that the circular story that your head goes in over and over and over again. And the more you think that story, the stronger those neural nets get, and the stronger it pulls you in. And if it pulls you in really, really so far, that actually becomes depression. And that's what PTSD is. It's like these, you know, it's these circular motions. And breath work actually pulls you out of that circular motion. And I can actually be, I'm aware of the difference after like the second or third round when I start to come out of it.
Yeah.
But it's very powerful.
Awesome. Well, thank you for all that. And we'll, Unconventional Lifers, we'll put that on the website at unconventionallifeshow.com to take a listen there. And just to kind of switch gears a little bit, I love where we've been going this conversation so far, but also I imagine some of our listeners, like, you know, where we started the conversation with how you got to where you were is also really interesting. Like, how does someone in the love of creation and the love of art, you know, how do you end up shooting Usher, for example? I know, actually, because we talked about it after we rode bike stars to a helicopter pad on a private island, and I was like, damn, that's a really cool story. But like, how does one, you know, because I think in a lot of ways, you know, if someone's hearing this, it's like, wow, I really want to do photography, but how do I actually make a really sustainable, not just sustainable, like an awesome living off of it? And then how do I get to do it with people and, you know, scenes and situations that I'm really inspired by? And so how have you seen that unfold in your story? And yeah, just help give the listeners a little bit of context for how, like, you know, you've come to where you've come to.
Yeah. I mean, I think I've always been, I mean, I read the book. Well, that's not obvious that I read the book, but Tim Ferriss, 4-Hour Work Week. That was one of the first books I read probably, I was like 21, 22. And that just gave me a whole different perspective. I mean, not necessarily the same style that he did it in, but like the idea of intentionally designing your life and intentionally creating the life that you want. And you have to start from the beginning. Like, you got to start with those small moments of like passion and desire to, you know, I think that's the first thing is if you want to make a living with as an artist, you have to have a passion for the craft, because it's not easy. And if your passion will carry you through the darker times, the harder times, because, you know, it's an up and down roller coaster, and you have to keep building your portfolio. So you have to shoot things. For me, it was shooting things. Once I discovered that I wanted to be a commercial lifestyle photographer at a certain point, I devoured it. I reverse engineered it. I looked at work that I like wanted to shoot, and I did shoots to like create a portfolio that looked like that, because that's how people hire you. And, but that takes a lot of time. There's a huge creative gap between what you envision, what you want to produce, or what you want to create, and what you actually produce. So much of the time of your 10,000 hours is spent, you know, the more time you spend shooting and creating and getting your work up to a certain level where people want to pay you for it, that's the first step. And that takes, you know, strategically building a portfolio. And then it comes to, you know, I think it really comes down to make better work and show more people. And you got to constantly be building your portfolio so that when you meet people, you have something to send them to, and you have something that's like beautiful, amazing, something that will sell them on hiring you. And then it's getting out there. It's, you know, for me, it was doing marketing campaigns, going to ad agencies, meeting and showing my portfolio to art buyers and potential like people. It was, if I got a shoot or I met people, it was like building that relationship. One of my first jobs was with Nike, my first big jobs. And I basically met the people, the Nike people on that that job, and kept in touch with them and kept building those relationships. And then they introduced me to other people, and then they brought me in on other jobs. And that's, I think everything is, it's all relationships. It's all who you know and what you're doing with that and how you bring that to other people. Then the blast into like the celebrity stuff kind of just came through giving back. Like, I connected with Pencils of Promise, with Adam Braun, who's the founder of Pencils of Promise. And he and I, like, this was before anything was anything. And I just wanted a developing world charity to get involved with, because I, you know, I believe that giving back is just an energy that needs to be a part of what I do and who I am in my business. So I met Adam. I was like, he was like, let's, you know, I'm going to Laos in December. If you want to come, can't pay for you, but you're welcome to come. And this was in 2009 and my business was doing really well. And I just bought a ticket and I flew out there, not having any knowing of what was in store and who I would meet. And, you know, because at this point, his brother, nobody knew who Justin Bieber was, all this stuff. And after we got back, it was like a couple years later that Justin blew up, and then Scooter became Scooter Braun. And I eventually met Scooter, and then he introduced me to Usher and Justin and Tori Kelly and some of his other artists. And then it turned into shooting them and making some money off of that as well. But just like all these crazy experiences, from like going on Usher's private vacation to going to a Clippers game with Justin to having dinner with Jay-Z and watching a concert with Jay-Z, Beyonce, and Usher. I mean, just wild, crazy experiences. I went to Usher's wedding, and I went to Scooter's wedding, and like all these crazy, like Tom Hanks was there, and you know, everybody's just like a family, like having a good time and having a great time. So it just led to all these crazy experiences, and you know, that stuff doesn't happen as much as it used to. And it's just kind of like a weaving through life kind of thing. But, you know, it all comes down to what I was just saying, is like making better pictures and showing more people and getting your work out there, but like also realizing and giving yourself the space to make better work. Because as an artist, that is the journey, is being patient to the point where you can get your work. It takes a lot of time to get your work to a certain point where people want to pay you for it.
I love all that advice. And if you're someone's listening to this and they're like, okay, I want to reverse engineer whatever it is, like let's say it's, you know, whether it's someone in the music industry, or maybe someone's listening to this and they've got an idea to like, you know, start some social impact thing or whatever it might be. What, like, if you could still distill it down, reverse engineer your own reverse engineering process, what would you say are some of the steps that someone could take and run with it?
Yeah, good question. I mean, I think it's probably different in different industries. Like for photography, it was more about, oh, I like this person's work. And then how can I meet them? How can I connect with them? And then how can I talk to them and get advice from them? And this is probably one of my big, I don't know if this is you, but my biggest pet peeve is when somebody asks to pick my brain. because everybody thinks that that's like a compliment, and that it's like, you're just going to give them, like in today's information age, that you're just going to give them everything for free when you worked so hard for all this, you know, for this. And I'm of the belief that if you come to somebody, like bring value, at least buy them coffee. You know what I mean? Like that person's time is so valuable. If they're, especially if you look up to them and they're at this like such high level, their time is money. And if you want to get with them, you have to bring a value to the table, because everybody's trying to do that nowadays. Everybody has access to everyone. And I think offering some sort of value, I think the best way to learn is to go and offer to work for that person and get in their office and get in their space. And, you know, that typically gives you access. You can even learn through osmosis just from being in a space. I mean, all the people that come and work for me, like, if somebody comes and gives their time, like I'm an open book. Like they can ask me whatever they want, and I'll share and teach them and mentor them. And because we're in a one-on-one space, and I think, you know, bring value to the experts in the industry, and then you can ask them questions, and then you can start to see how they build things. And the other thing too is there's so many podcasts and so much information out there now of like people giving it away, or just, you know, giving information away to, on a mass level and a mass scale. And you can learn that way. But it's really about finding the experts and how they've done it, and then connecting with them or devouring their material, their books, you know, supporting them, I think is a huge piece of the pie. And then you can kind of reverse engineer from learning from them.
Yeah, absolutely. Learning by osmosis. I love it. So good. And, you know, and so in addition to all of that, you know, I also want to move over to the personal branding world of photography, which I know you really In addition to obviously doing these celebrity shoots, these impact-driven campaigns, these corporate campaigns, you also do a ton. You've become really an expert at personal branding photography. You know, we've got a lot of listeners out there, you know, that have their various personal brands, or even if you're looking to start a personal brand of some kind, or maybe you have another brand and now you're wanting to brand yourself more. I remember Andy Drish, which was, we've had him on the show as well, but a mutual friend. You know, how Nick and you and I got connected was he is like, dude, got to check out this photographer's work. He shoots like all these brands. He's like, oh, I really want him to like come shoot. And then he's like, maybe we could bring him to the island in Madagascar and like it could all come together there. And I was like, okay, this could be an interesting idea. And I like saw some of your work, and I know you've shot Lewis Howes, you've shot Jay Shetty, you've shot quite a few different personal brands. But I'd love to kind of, you know, distill down what you think is honestly missing for a lot of people when they go to visually represent from their brands. And then in terms of storytelling through photography, just some tips or some insider perspective that you could offer in that domain for those that are really looking to elevate their presence and what you see working and why some of these people like Lewis Howes or these big brands are really calling you in to do that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, actually Lewis is how I got started in this kind of, in this whole niche, because like I met him about 8 years ago, and through Pencils of Promise, actually, he's a big supporter of the charity, and that's how we connected. And we didn't even shoot anything for a couple of years. I don't think it was even on his radar. And then when he was rebuilding his website, rebranding himself, we did a shoot. And then people started asking, you know, who did your work and all this stuff, or who did your photography, and then he recommended to me. And then like, I just like more stuff started come down the pipeline with that. And then I started to create, and I ended up just creating a whole different business vertical around that. Because what I have that's unique to anybody else that's even doing personal brand photography is that I have shot these big brands and these big celebrities. And so I bring what I've learned from that over to the personal brand, and I can kind of show people how to, you know, we weave in lifestyle concepts around their story and what the brand story that they want to tell and like what they're all about. So there is I do have a process around that, and we kind of do an information download and then a photo shoot design consult call based off of this form that they fill out. That kind of gives me an idea of like who they are, what they're all about. Some people are about family. Some people are about their knowledge of books or reading books and different things. And so we create visual stories around those types of things. And, you know, so that's kind of like the process of how I work. And that's a lot of how we do things in the commercial world, you know, with, you know, you're shooting like a Coca-Cola campaign, for instance, and like, take the demographic, you take the idea, the concept, and then we build a story around it. And with personal brand, the person is the product and the person is the story. And you know, if you have to sell yourself, you have to rise above the noise. And I think some common mistakes that people make is putting imagery out there that looks like they're working out of a garage. And I think, you know, if you want to command a higher price point, then you have to look like a higher price point. Not like you just started and you're just in the garage doing your thing. People want to, you know, branding subconsciously gives you a perception, gives the viewer and your client a perception of who you are. So you can take that and control that by creating intentionally the type of imagery of the story that you want to tell and the aesthetic and like elevated look and aesthetic that you want to convey. Lewis calls it GQ photography because it's like what you would see in a magazine, because like when we do these shoots, it's like of the level that you could submit to a magazine. Like he's put stuff, some of the images like on like the cover of Success magazine or different things like that. So we'll build an arsenal of images that have like a higher level look to them. And then if press opportunities come through, they can send those through. You know, we put them on the high level website stuff and any sort of brand touch points. But yeah, I think hiring a photographer that like you really connect with, whose work you love, is a huge piece of that. And you have to look at their portfolio to see what they've done, to see what their lighting aesthetic looks like, what their, you know, you can even look into how they direct the talent and how they capture the talent. Cause that's going to give you a good indication of what they're going to capture with you. as with any artist, like you hire a designer, it's kind of the same thing. Is like you look at their portfolio because you know that like what's in their portfolio, you're going to get something pretty similar to that.
Yeah.
So with a photographer, that's how I kind of give that advice. I actually did a, I have a free ebook on elevating your personal visual brand. And that's a free download if we want to put that in there.
Yeah,
awesome. To check out.
Yeah, we will add that to the show note collection along with the breathwork at unconventionallifeshow.com. And you can search for Nick Onken's article. So we'll be sure to tag that in. Last little part here before we start to wrap up and jump into the rapid fire round. And for those that are digging this conversation, especially around this personal brand stuff and really, you know, an assessment of some kind, stay tuned for the giveaway, upcoming attractions. Got a little bit more for you on that there. But any last, you know, reflective words for someone that wants to just give an assessment to themselves, whether they're looking at their own Instagram, they're looking at their website, like when you are taking on a prospective client, for example, and I know you know, really only work with a very small group of people. What are some of the things that you look like you ask yourself when you're looking at someone else's stuff that someone could then ask themselves when looking at their own stuff to really, you know, a few little dials tweaks that might be able to shift some things for them pretty quickly?
You mean stuff that they can do?
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. I think, the first step with anything is awareness. You know, look at other people who are doing it big, look at what they're doing, and then how can you distill that or take some of what they're doing and apply that to your Instagram feed or whatever. I think higher quality imagery is a huge piece of that. So you can either, you know, you can take a course on how to do better photography, you can hire another photographer. But also I think one thing that I notice is how you can tie your cat, like write a good story around that's congruent with the photograph. And I find these, a lot of people don't do that. And you find this weird disconnect and inauthenticity. My friends and I were joking about this is like there's a whole Instagram account with that. It's called like girls with irrelevant captions. And it's hilarious. But the whole idea behind that is like, she's like, you know, you have like this like hot girl in a bikini, yet she's talking about like some deep, weird, like personal development thing. And you're like, this doesn't make sense. It's non-congruent. Yeah. So it just like goes back to my point of like create congruency with the story that you're telling and the images that you're showing, you know, because you're like screaming insecurity and look at me, look at my body, but like trying to say something else. So think about the story that you're telling as it relates to the photograph and what you want, because that's all the story that you want people, that you're telling other people, and that you want, you're subconsciously programming what people think of you. So think about that story.
Yeah. So good. irrelevant captions. Like I think there's so much juice in all that. So thank you for sharing that, Nick. Let's jump into the rapid fire round. Listeners, we've got some good stuff coming up shortly after this. This is a series of lightning questions coming at you. Are you ready?
Let's do it.
All right. Question number one, fill in the blank. If you really knew me, you would know what?
Oh man.
Going right for it, you know.
Wow, this is a harder than a lightning question. I think if you really knew me, I like to be seen for who I am.
Next question. What is one place in the world that you feel is underappreciated that has a really special place to you?
One place in the world?
Yeah, one place in the world.
Of all the places I've been, how about Nepal?
Why?
I don't know, the Everest Base Camp Trail is just like one of the most epically magical places. There's an energy and a space to it that I think is that you don't hear about it that often.
Yeah. Awesome. Next question. What are some of your non-negotiables in terms of regular practices that you feel set you up for success?
Non-negotiables. I have to have a morning routine. I think now meditation is definitely a non-negotiable first thing in the morning.
Mm-hmm. Awesome.
Or do you want more than that?
A little more. A little more. Meditation, what else?
Meditation, physical activity, fitness, staying moving, eating healthy. I'm so much more to eating healthy. Oh, sleep. Hello. I need good sleep. I know that it does so much for your body, and that's like having 7 to 8 hours is a non-negotiable.
Yeah. Awesome. So good. Last question. What does living the unconventional life mean to you?
Living the unconventional life means going against the grain, doing what you want and what you love, and building the biggest life that you can around that.
Yeah. So good. Nick, Nick, tell us about the giveaway that you've got for one of our listeners.
I'm happy to give away a 15-minute consultation around, it could be either around your personal brand, or if you're a photographer and you want to learn more about that, I can do a 15-minute consultation.
Awesome. And you can head over to unconventionallifeshow.com to get the details about that and apply for giveaway. And just as someone who's just spent kind of the last, week and a half or week, however long our Madagascar journey was, Nick is a man full of lots of inspiration. And I've definitely learned a lot from you and a lot also from this interview segment as well. So if you want the opportunity to win the giveaway for that, head over to unconventionallifeshow.com or send us an email and let us know why. And we'll also make sure to put those links for the breath work and for the ebook as well. And Nick, for those that want to follow along on your journey, check out your amazing Instagram, which I really like looking at. I like how you storytell through images, but also just stay in touch with you. What's the best way to do all that?
Yeah, I would say Instagram is kind of the primary business card now, right? At Nick Onken, NICKONKEN. From there, you can get to all of my other Instagram accounts, my travel, my hats, my photography and podcasts and all that stuff.
Yeah, amazing. Lastly, I know we didn't touch about the hats too much, but what does being a hat maker mean to you? And what are you excited about with that? Because I know it's a lot of where you're going, and I've seen your hats photographed in cool places like helicopter, at least over the last little bit we were in Madagascar. just tell us a little about that real quick.
Yeah, it was just birthed out of a friend of mine who got me into hat making and kind of taught me some of the ropes. Her name's Satya. And I just, I wanted to take things in my own creative direction. And it's just evolved from there. And then I've had people, every time I wear them out, people want, where'd you get that? And I was like, I made it. Even to the point where Justin Bieber saw me in Soho House and was like, yelled at me. And he was like, nice hat, man. And then we didn't know it was, we were each other. And then walked up to, and he was like, oh, I love that hat. It's just kind of it's evolved from there. And I've just been doing, now I do custom bespoke hats for people in the style that I do. And it's just a fun creative outlet, and it's really fun to have other people get excited about wearing something that I made. It's like an art. It's like they're like individual art pieces themselves.
Yeah, totally. They are awesome as well. And we'll throw some links up there as well too. But it's the evolution of creation. And so I find, some things you've said as well, it's like once the fountain is running, it can come out in a lot of different forms. So I love all that. And Nick, thanks so much for chatting with our listeners today. It was good to have you on the Unconventional Life Show, and looking forward to seeing all the things that you create. So thanks for being a part of it.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Unconventional Lifers, more awesome content coming at you guys soon. Thanks so much, everyone.